We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning, America. Alex McFarland here sitting in for Jenna Ellis. Very honored to do so. I bid you good morning. We've got a great show for you. We're going to be speaking later on in the show with Scott Eulinger about Israel. And our first guest is going to be Ron Coleman, a distinguished attorney. And we'll talk about the Supreme Court, and I want to bring him up in a moment. But first, I do want to welcome you. You are listening to the American Family Radio Network. And I want to say a word about North Carolina, my home state. I'm not there right now, but North Carolina is where my family has lived for like a couple of hundred years. But as you probably have seen, Hurricane Helene has brought a lot of devastation and flooding. And I want to say I appreciate everybody's prayers. I've gotten, since last night, probably like 100 texts from people inquiring about North Carolina, especially Western North Carolina, because the city of Asheville, large city in the western part of the state, it's very much in the news. They're having like flooding, like a 100-year flood, like the only kind you'd get in a century. And a lot of devastation. The historic little town of Black Mountain, very beautiful town, is underwater, at least partially. And just a few moments ago, I was texting with Will Graham, friend Will Graham, son of Franklin Graham, and the Cove. Many people have asked about the Cove, because I speak there a lot. It is fine. In fact, it's become a kind of a headquarters for disaster relief. Samaritan's Purse Ministries has generators, and the Cove has the ability to produce clean water. And please just keep that part of the nation in your prayers. You know, water, clean water, and safety, and just starting to build back after a weekend of devastation by weather is pretty hard. So everyone's concern and interest in Western North Carolina, much appreciated. But right now, I want to talk about something that's of equally important interest, really, and that's the makeup of the Supreme Court and the next session and sessions that they'll be conducting. To help us with that is attorney Ron Coleman. He has been a member of a number of distinguished law firms in California, New York, New Jersey, Florida, Texas, Virginia, and he is renowned for his work in trademark and commercial litigation, and has successfully presented in front of the U.S. Supreme Court before. A fascinating career and a lot of insights. Attorney Ron Coleman, we welcome you to the program now.
Good morning, Alex. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thank you for making time. I appreciate that. And before we jump into SCOTUS issues, give us your website and tell us a little bit about yourself beyond what I laid out there.
Well, that's very generous of you. The fact is, people can just go type in my name and put .com, Ron Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N, .com, and they can find out about the kind of work that I do, and also see my social media, which I think a lot of your listeners will appreciate. I don't know how many people who listen to the program throughout the many stations that Jenna broadcasts on encounter Orthodox Jewish lawyers, but I think it's good for people of faith to connect all over the world.
Yes, and it is a privilege to have you on, and not only our listeners, but I myself appreciate you and the work you do. And, you know, I want to talk about SCOTUS, but last week I was on a briefing from Israel with a group that my wife and I support, designed to combat anti-Semitism. And you, as an Orthodox Jewish attorney, on a very personal level, let me just ask you, the anti-Semitism that has reared its head since the October 23 terrorist attacks, I mean, I've been shocked. And I would like your response to that and how maybe American Jewry feels about the state of safety for Jewish people in the world today.
Well, you know, Alex, it has been something certainly that someone, you know, who's grown up in a golden age in American history and the history of the Western world. There was this great flowering of tolerance and mutual appreciation. But what has, I mean, a lot of Jewish people have a lot of different feelings about this. The state of Israel has been a complicating factor in our relationship with the world. I think that the founders of the state believed that once they demonstrated to the world that Jews could fight for themselves and Jews had their own land and their own army, that they would get respect. And I think they didn't count on the psychological role of Jews in the mentality of people who need to find reasons to be unhappy and to be resentful about their own lives, about their own lots, and never, there's no group, unfortunately, that is more representative of this than the militant Palestinians who have made the Jews, and not merely the Zionists, but the Jews, the reason for all their unhappiness and all their social dysfunction. And as someone who is very active on social media, I will say that I've been very disappointed with the extent to which it has been accepted on platforms like X and more than anywhere else to say extremely ugly things about Jewish people.
Let me ask you this: if
Jews would return to God, I think we that's our best. That's frankly our best approach.
Indeed. Why is it important for any American president to have an administration that's a strong ally with Israel?
Well, I think there is a general consensus among people who are serious about analyzing foreign policy that having an ally in the Middle East, not only an ally with strategic assets to offer, such as Saudi Arabia, but an ally that has a Western-style government and a culture that is largely simpatico with that of the United States is beneficial to the United States. It's a region that's of great importance to us. You know, there are many tactical and strategic reasons for it, but as a moral matter, it is imperative for the United States to be in support of countries that share the liberal, and I mean small L, of course, but the traditional, classical, and small d democratic values that are the premise of this country. And I understand we're a constitutional republic, we're not a pure democracy, but the United States should be supporting freedom. And in the state of Israel, unlike any other state in the Middle East, freedom and citizenship and all the benefits of citizenship are available to every person, regardless of his religion or ethnic background, which is not true of any other country in that region.
Exactly. It is truly a pluralistic society. And I mean pluralism in the sense of liberty and freedom. Just as America is, or at least up until recently, was a clearly pluralistic society. And I think a lot of American citizens don't realize how vital it is. I mean, we think about so many domestic issues, but it is imperative. Folks, whomever you vote for, they should understand our relationship with Israel and support that. In the interest of time, I want to change gears and talk about the Supreme Court. It's interesting to me, Mr. Coleman, how many people, especially young people, believe that the Supreme Court is a legislative body. That was not its intent, although de facto it's kind of become that, hasn't it?
Well, it has certainly become a policymaking body, which was something that Justice Sotomayor told us we had to recognize was something that she recognized. And it does legislate. I do think that under the current composition of the court, there is less of an inclination to legislate than there was certainly, I think, 20, 30 years ago. I'm less concerned with the Supreme Court legislating than with the lower courts legislating, because the Supreme Court is much more cognizant of what it's doing. But unfortunately, I think the worst thing the Supreme Court does right now is that it doesn't take nearly enough cases that deserve to be considered. There's a lot of bad law out there that the Supreme Court can and should be resolving, not in a legislative way, but by interpreting the Constitution and interpreting statutes as it is charged to do under the Constitution, and which it has simply declined to do.
Oh, let me ask you this. Are there some presuppositions that judges hold that are unconstitutional, but they've been repeated and tolerated for so long that these unconstitutional presuppositions almost are just a given at this point? And if so, what are those?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think a lot of those really became obvious, including at the Supreme Court level, during the COVID cases, the cases challenging the absolutely unconstitutional restrictions that governments put on people's liberty during the COVID crisis. And one of those is that one of those assumptions is that if there's a problem that's really serious and a legislature has failed to legislate or to legislate properly or effectively, courts have the power to step in and do that.
And suspend constitutional liberties.
Either suspend it or approve executive suspense of it, because it's a problem that has to be solved. And that, I think, goes to your point about legislation, that the Supreme Court makes a policy choice like a legislature does. And that's truly tragic.
It's dangerous, isn't it?
It is dangerous because basically there's no accountability. I mean, in theory, to some extent, the problem is the fault of the other branches of government, because the Supreme Court has made many decisions that ran contrary. For example, the entire concept of affirmative action, which became DEI, was a patently not only unconstitutional, but an outright betrayal of the Civil Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act certainly of 1964. All Congress had to do after affirmative action was approved by the Supreme Court repeatedly was legislate and say, listen, Supreme Court got this wrong, but we're here to save the day. Let's pass a law that says that, no, all racial discrimination is unconstitutional. They didn't do that. They don't have the nerve to push back against the Supreme Court, which is built into the Constitution. And that's happened time and time again on a wide variety of legislative issues that the Supreme Court has taken away from Congress and that Congress has let it take away.
We have got a break coming up, and I hear the music coming in. I've got to talk with you further. You are a fascinating guest and so insightful. I really, really appreciate that. I regret we're out of time for right now. But again, give your website and may we talk again soon. Mr. Coleman? Well, I think we've lost him. Hey, Alex McFarland here sitting in for Jenna Ellis. This is the American Family Radio Network. Stay tuned. We're going to come back with Scott Uhlinger. We're going to talk about Israel and hear about Western North Carolina and more. God bless you. Stay tuned. AFR is back after this.
If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Alex McFarland here sitting in for Jenna Ellis. Very honored to do so. By the way, if you recognize my voice, it might be because of a program that is heard 3 to 4 Central, 4 to 5 Eastern Time, live 5 days a week on the American Family Radio Network, Exploring the Word, with myself and Bert Harper. And we'd be very honored if you would tune in and check out Exploring the Word. But very privileged now to sort of change gears and talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is Israel. And to help us with this is Scott Uhlinger. He's a national security expert, a commentator, retired veteran, United States MMA graduate, and son of the American Revolution, loving husband and father. And his website, stationchiefsu.com. Scott Uhlinger, thank you for being with us this morning on the Jenna Ellis program.
Good morning, Alex.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for making time to be with us. Before we get into the subject of Israel, and I want to do a deep dive on some of the topics related to that, give us a little info about yourself beyond what I shared just now.
Oh, well, I'm a retired CIA station chief. I spent, after I was graduated and when I was in the Navy, I went into the CIA, and I'm a Russian speaker. And so I spent most of my career in the CIA in the former Soviet Union. So I was living overseas, recruiting spies for the U.S. government. And then I retired as a station chief. And then now I do, like a lot of talk about international security issues.
Wow. Now, is a career like that as exciting as myself and everybody listening assumes it would be? I mean, this sounds like a movie script. A CIA chief recruiting spies, fluent in Russian. That sounds like an amazing life.
It was exciting. It's not quite like the movies. In other words, you know, there's not a lot of explosions. I don't carry a gun. I carry a pen. But it is
exciting. It's a spy pen.
I live in some very interesting places, and I got to do some very, you know, important things. So it was a very good career that I'm very happy and very proud of.
So in the movies, the Cold War scenarios, you know, going to Moscow and Petersburg, spy versus spy. Does that still go on? I mean, what is the state of the Cold War now, if indeed the Cold War even still exists?
Well, certainly there is a need for, there's a great need for human intelligence. And in fact, going back to Israel, that's, you can see that now. But unfortunately, what's happened in the CIA, and I think in other foreign intelligence services, is that not only do you have the DEI stuff lowering the quality of people who are called upon to do this type of thing, but also there is an over-reliance on technology. And technology is very important, but clearly, like, for example, with in Israel, with this with operation, like I like to call it, Operation Grim Beeper, with the exploding pagers,
yes,
that took a lot of human intelligence. And human intelligence is not the kind of thing you can throw a couple of, you know, $100 million at and get a program running in 6 months. It's the type of thing that is very slow, very painstaking, and can take many years to set up a network. Now, like with the pagers, for example, Israel, the story is that Israel set up a shell company to sell the pagers. They were altering the pagers and then selling them themselves. Now, that supposedly took more than a decade of work. And I have no doubt, being a human intelligence specialist, that that is the truth. So this is the kind of long game stuff that a good intelligence service is capable of. And at this point, I think it's pretty much emerged that Israel has the finest intelligence service in the world, that they can do these types of operations.
Yeah. I mean, Operation Grim Beeper, and, you know, I would urge people not to forget this, even though it's, you know, I think it was September 17. I mean, this is like straight out of the best Hollywood script you could imagine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, an explosive device significant enough to do real damage, sophisticated enough to be remotely activated, and yet not so obtrusive that it would be noticed. And boom, in unison, it happened. I mean, that takes the best intel in the world, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And also, another advantage of doing this kind of thing is that you didn't kill any innocent people. There was no collateral damage. You're not dropping a 2,000-pound bomb on a building. You're taking everyone who has a pager in Beirut is a terrorist by definition. Nobody uses, you know, late 80s technology like that nowadays. So if you're using it, you're a terrorist. If you're a terrorist, you were eliminated. And by doing that, they took out about 3,000 people. So think about it. They obviously, when they sold these pagers, I mean, they probably had major book on almost most of those figures. Another nice thing about human intelligence, and we're seeing it again in real time, is that the more successful you are, the more successful you are. Meaning, what's happening clearly is that as members of Hezbollah are eliminated, there are more members of Hezbollah who are saying, oh, wait a minute, I am on the wrong side here. I'm going to die. I need to move forward to the Israelis and tell them what I know. So there were a lot of talks about, for example, a major defector of Hezbollah. This is like maybe 4 or 5 days ago, was one of their money men. So, like, you know, he showed up to the Israelis with maybe millions of dollars in cash and says, okay, don't kill me. I'll tell you what you need to know. And so this type of thing happens. You get like a flow outward, as everyone doesn't want to be on the losing side, especially in the Arab world. And so then success breeds more success. And we are looking at, without a doubt, and I used to teach intelligence, I practiced it, this is one of the greatest intelligence coups of like the last 500 years. It's unbelievable in its complexity and its success.
Well, yeah. And when things like this happen, and I've been privileged to, I mean, there have been the things in the news, but then other things that I've learned from people that I know. I mean, God is with Israel. You know, I just think part of that
very
is...
Very much so. That's right.
Absolutely. So here's the thing. Okay, the UN and the world and the pop media and academia, they're constantly pressuring Israel to de-escalate and not defend itself. Why are there very narrow rules of war imposed on Israel, but no one else?
Yeah, right. Very good question. Right. Right. So Hezbollah can launch rockets, as it has since October 7th, hundreds of rockets at Israel. But then the moment Israel smacks down those who would kill its children, and they did kill Israeli children, then suddenly Israel is the bad guy. And of course, it's terrible. And God, is the devil behind this directly? Maybe he is. But like, for example, I was really incredibly, I'm already disappointed in a lot of the CIA. I mean, you have the 51 intel officers talking about Hunter Biden's laptop, and it's disgusting. But they actually, a former director of the CIA, after Operation Grim Reaper, he actually was on Twitter or somewhere saying, this was Panetta, Leon Panetta, was saying that what Israel had perpetrated was a terrorist act. Now, I would like to read that idiot the riot act, because Hezbollah is directly responsible for the murder of 241 U.S. servicemen, mostly Marines, in 1983. So these guys, Israel is doing our job for us. They have eliminated dozens of terrorists, many of whom are on U.S. terrorist watch lists where we offer a reward. Israel is doing our job for us, and these people have the audacity to criticize Israel for not only basically protecting American lives, but also for protecting their own lives.
Yeah, what a joke. And what a tragedy, like in August when Netanyahu spoke before Congress and Rashida Tlaib, I believe it was her, and a couple were holding up little placards right in front of his face saying war criminal. I mean, this is crazy. from time immemorial, nations and individuals have had the right to self-defense. Why not Israel?
That's right. And so, these people are Rashida Tlaib, now she can wear a T-shirt that says all my friends are dead since she has a habit of supporting terrorist groups which are directly responsible for killing Americans. I hope her feelings are very much hurt by all this. Now, luckily, Israel has been playing the Biden administration pretty well, because basically at this point, they're not telling Biden anything, as well they shouldn't. They understand that these people are going to betray Israel. So they are not, they're telling, oh, by the way, we did this, not, oh, we'd like permission to do this. They're very pragmatic and war focused. They've lost hundreds of people themselves, and, they are in a war mode. And it's a wonder to behold. It's the way the United States used to be, that it's clear that when you have these capabilities are one thing, but you also have to have the will to win. And it's something that maybe we've lacked in the United States for like half a century, most of my lifetime. We don't have the will to win. Now, the interesting thing is the will to win is actually going to create maybe a new dawn of peace in the Middle East, because they are moving forward. They are destroying these people. And believe me, that most of the people celebrating in the Middle East are the Muslims. It's not just the Christians in Beirut or the Jews in Israel, but across the Arab world, there are Sunnis and even Shia Muslims who are celebrating the death of these monsters, because
exactly,
they sense that there will be a new dawn of freedom for them.
Yeah, exactly. And you raise a great topic that I would love to explore, is the will to win. What grieves me is, Scott, is that, we're several generations into an America where children and those growing up, for one thing, they've never really seen America at her best, but they've never been in an America where patriotism was affirmed, and that it's a good thing for us to be proud of America and care about America, and the will to perpetuate our constitutional American principles. As a Christian, if you even talk about, caring about the country, stewarding the country, they'll say, oh, you're a Christian nationalist, you're some sort of subversive. And I've been on Fox News and other outlets, and I'll say, so I'm a Christian nationalist, thank you. Yes, I'm a Christian, and yes, I care about the USA. If that makes me a bad guy, so be it. But the will to win and the will to thrive and perpetuate one's nation, I would think that's only rational.
Right, exactly. But now we are presently irrational. And so you're right. This is an extremely important topic. It pervades everything that we know of in American life. And so and it's a big problem. And this is another reason why the agency is far less effective than even it was when I retired 10 years ago or so. Because you've got a whole generation of people who are being raised, who are going in the military, going in the government, going into private business and everywhere else. And they've been taught that America is not a special place because communists have penetrated our school system since, like, you know, the 80s. And so these people are going into these various services or whatever, and they actually don't think America is that great. So do they have the will to prosecute, let's say, a war to protect Americans? And sometimes you wonder. And we've seen maybe the handiwork of this in most of my working life, in the sense that I just turned 60. So, you know, I entered the Navy when I was, you know, in the mid 80s. And since then, everything has declined. We don't really prosecute wars to the extent we should. We don't do what needs to be done morally. And as a result, the country suffers for it.
What would you say the CIA's role, what's the CIA doing in relation to the 12 to 22 million illegals that have crossed the southern border?
that's an excellent question. I mean, I cannot emphasize how much what a black disaster this is. I mean, now we have the revelations that 600,000 of them are criminals. So then that begs the question, you know, I mean, I used to think about this 10 years ago, but 10 years ago, the flood of illegal immigrants was nothing like it is today. It's like, okay, I'm over here in Moldova trying to do things here and there to prevent terrorist attacks on the United States. But yet at the same time, the border is open. Now, of course, nowadays, this is a fact times of 100. So what is the point of my being overseas trying to protect Americans? It's literally like giving me a shovel and sending me to the Atlantic and say, shovel the ocean out. What is the point? I mean, if I can try to save one or two American lives by doing what I'm trying to do, but you're letting millions of immigrants in, some of which are unquestionably hooked up to Hezbollah, the Chinese military, etc., then what is the point? And the point of these evil people in this evil administration is to destroy the country. It's not a difference of political philosophy. They want to destroy us. And it's clear when you see those figures that were just released on Friday afternoon, 13,000 murderers, 15,000 rapists. I mean, it's unbelievable that these people would do this to us, but yet it's being done.
Yes, and the Biden-Harris administration, and borders are a Kamala Harris, it will be more of the same in the next 4 years if, God forbid, she's elected. Ron Coleman, we've got to talk more in the future. We've got to pull away now. Thank you so much. Give us your website quickly, if you would.
My website is inactive, but people can find me on Twitter at The Station Chief, on X at The Station Chief. But thanks a lot, Alex.
Thank you, Scott Uhlinger. Alex McFarland here on the American Family Radio Network. Stay tuned. We're back after this brief break. Your calls, 888-589-8840. Call us.
In fact, there are fewer border crossings today than when Donald Trump left office.
As I've said many times on this program, Republicans can lie sometimes too.
Sure.
But
that's a whopper.
But what Biden did right there, that's kind of like shameless.
Yes.
You've let millions and millions of people in. It's in the mainstream liberal media that got so bad. And he did it in the name of stopping xenophobia.
Today's issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Alex McFarland here. Very honored to be with you. Hey, by the way, do you know today, September 30th, now get this, there's a famous scholar of years past, James Usher. Bishop Usher, you might have heard of him. Do you know, he calculated what honestly is a pretty respected estimation of the date of creation, but Usher believed that it was on a September 30th that Adam and Eve were ejected from the Garden of Eden. Isn't that something? Was he correct? Maybe. But if that be the case, today, September 30th, the anniversary date that Adam and Eve were ejected from the Garden of Eden, well, that's why we need Jesus. But hey, before we resume, I want to tell everybody, Friday through Sunday, I will be in Bella Vista, Arkansas. Bella Vista, Arkansas. And it's on my website. I'll be at a church there speaking Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Worldview, current events. I would love to meet you if you are in the area of Arkansas this weekend. But right now, and we are going to take calls, the number 888-589-8840. I'd like to hear about who you're planning to vote for and why. But right now, I'm going to talk with a friend and colleague, Tim Bryant. I called him last night. He is in the Asheville area, and there's just such devastation. And he's going to give us kind of a boots on the ground report. Tim, thanks for holding, and welcome to the American Family Radio Network.
Hey, good morning, Alex. How are you?
Well, we're praying for Asheville, and that's where you live, right?
Yes, we're north of Asheville, out at Weaverville, and then out towards Marshall on the Marshall Highway. It's really been something here. We're grateful. I mean, we're in an area where we've had power back on after about 48 hours. But there is a lot of people that are going to be without power for quite some time, probably. Mm-hmm. And, there's sections of Asheville that have been completely devastated and underwater, like the River Arts District and Biltmore area. So really, you may know more about what's really going on because you've got news coverage and, We don't even have internet. We've had limited cell service and all, but we've been connecting with families at the church, trying to find out if everybody's okay. We do have one family who lived on a creek, and their house was split in two, and they lost everything. So, but everyone's safe. So,
and
anyway, it is going to be a long recovery.
Wow. Well, and a lot of people don't have fresh water. And
yeah. In fact, I heard that they're telling people in Black Mountain just to leave. If you have somewhere you can go, because the water situation there is really bad. So,
do you know how many fatalities there have been, Tim?
I don't have a complete number locally. I did hear that the area in Chimney Rock, along that area right below the entrance to the place, was cleaned completely out. The whole town is gone. And
really?
Someone told me that there may be as many as 11 missing or dead in that area.
In Buncombe County, where Asheville is, I heard that they estimate maybe 30 people dead in Buncombe County. And
wow.
Well, please be assured that our thoughts and prayers are with everybody. And, you know, Tim, I know that area well. I've preached in churches all over Western North Carolina and around Asheville and Black Mountain and Montreat. And there's so many historic mountain towns, very beautiful towns, lots and lots of churches and Christian people up that way. But the Cove, I mentioned it earlier, the Billy Graham Training Center, there at Black Mountain on exit, I think it's exit 55.
55, yes.
Will Graham texted me this morning. The Cove is fine. They have many generators and the ability to produce fresh water. And so for the next 30 days and maybe more, the Cove is going to be a disaster relief kind of headquarters. And I'm sure they'll be doing a lot of good work. But Any final thought before we pull away, Tim?
Well, again, Again, sections of the county are okay, and then other places are going to be without power for quite some time. Currently, food is holding up, but very long gasoline. Food's going to be an issue probably in the next 4 days, I would expect. So just your prayers, and if you can donate to some of the places that are doing airlifts into Western North Carolina, I'm sure that would be helpful.
So. Yeah. You know, Tim, I read there are 19 counties with substantial groups that don't have electricity, and thank the Lord we're not into winter yet. I mean, but like McDowell County, 93% of the customers do not have power. Rutherford County, 90% don't have power. And folks, you got to understand, Western North Carolina, there have been winters where there were snowstorms and they had to airlift food in, you know, very mountainous. So, you know, airlifting food in, this might be one of those occasions. In fact, it is. But Tim, we've got to pull away, but I want to say thank you. And please let all of your, neighbors know that America is praying and we all want to do what we can do to help Western North Carolina.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Alex.
Bless you. Thank you for being with us. And good morning, everybody. Alex McFarland here. You're listening to the Jenna Ellis Show. I'm very honored to be sitting in for Jenna. We're going to change gears and go to Rebecca in Arkansas. Friday night, I went to see, Angie and I went to see the movie Vindicating Trump, produced by my friend Dinesh D'Souza. I've known Dinesh for 18 years. We've collaborated. He's spoken for us many, many times. And Rebecca, are you there? Rebecca from Arkansas?
Yes. Yes, I am. And I want to see you in Bella Vista. It's just a few miles away.
Wonderful. Yes. Well, please come up and introduce yourself. Have you seen the Vindicating Trump movie?
Oh, it was wonderful seeing it yesterday afternoon. I kept trying to find people to go with me because my husband wasn't going to go, and he missed out on a wonderful, wonderful movie. But I finally found somebody who could go. Everybody was wanting to go, but they just couldn't. And I was so sad to see not many in the theater because people, I think, don't know about it.
I know.
It was just wonderful seeing President Trump speaking and telling, opening up his heart, and Dinesh D'Souza, you know, elaborating on things and showing us what's really going on. It was wonderful.
Folks, let me just say this. Dinesh has 1 degree, I think, from Dartmouth, 1 from Harvard. He was in the Reagan White House, longtime conservative and Christian writer. I first began to have Dinesh D'Souza at my conferences about 2006. He wrote a book, Defending Christianity, a brilliant, brilliant thinker, communicator. And I booked him in a number of cities to debate the atheist Christopher Hitchens. And then I became friends with Hitchens, too, who ultimately became very pro-life. But folks, this movie, like everything Dinesh does, very well researched. Vindicating Trump, it's in theaters near you. I don't know how long it'll be in theaters. You've got to bring your liberal friends to watch it. Rebecca, it showed that the Democrat left has election fraud down to an art form. Did you?
Oh, yes.
I was incredibly struck by that, weren't you?
Oh, yes. It's so sad and scary. I think it's only the Lord who's going to make this 2024 election work out for his glory. If he will.
Yeah.
But we're praying to do our part, of course, too.
Hold that thought, Rebecca. But folks, get this. In the movie Vindicating Trump, Dinesh and his documentary filmmakers actual footage, they show, do you know you can go online? I'm not going to tell you where or how, but it is relatively easy just to buy ballots. You can buy a case of 10,000 absentee ballots. And he documents, in addition to documenting how Russian collusion was a hoax, January 6th, the narrative you've heard is an absolute hoax. And, you know, Donald Trump, who could be just enjoying the retirement years of a billionaire, he's willing to go out there and repeatedly nearly get assassinated for this nation. And yet there is so much. There was great election fraud in 2020, the potential for it in 24, 20 million illegals here. I mean, think about this. Of the illegal aliens here right now, 600,000 are known criminals and terrorists. That's the population of Boston. Imagine the city of Boston, the equivalent of that number of terrorists and criminals are in America, and Border Czar Kamala Harris could have done something about it beginning 4 years ago, and she hasn't. But Rebecca, I am glad you called in about this movie. And any other thoughts about what you learned in watching Vindicating Trump by Dinesh D'Souza? It's in theaters now. Any final thoughts, Rebecca?
Yeah, his heart for America. He loves his family. He's such a wonderful, compassionate family man and loves the people of America and our country and our institutions. He wants to save our country and us. And I just love the man. He's made mistakes in the past, but he's a good man.
Yeah. Well, and he's a constitutionalist, and that's what we need. Rebecca, thanks for calling in. 888-589-8840 is the number. We're going to go to my home state of North Carolina. Alex in North Carolina. That's surreal. I'm Alex from North Carolina, but we have a caller named Alex. Welcome.
Good morning, Alex, and it's nice to talk to you.
Ditto. Nice to speak with you. What you got, Alex?
Okay, Alex, this is sound familiar to you, Russian collusion and bombshell and all these kind of words that the old negative media started the shows with. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Every time you turn a show or a news show, they start with that word. And that's a specific strategy they use to sink their information in your mind.
Yes.
So that's very effective. I just wonder why if AFA don't do the same, AFR. I mean, it's a little bit just communicating with every single host of every single show and start the show, their own show, with devotional, as they always do, and immediately start with the main issue of the week or of the day, so people can know exactly what's going on in the Christian front lines. I didn't even know about this movie until now, and that's a shame, because that's a very important movie people need to see.
It really is. And, you know, you make a good point, Alex, that, you know, Joseph Goebbels of the Nazi regime, he said, repeat a lie often enough and it becomes the truth. And psychologists talk about something called the illusion of truth. And that's bad when, you know, liars repeat lies over and over and over, and it becomes, at least to a degree, ingrained in the minds of people. But truth is that way too. And, you know, I can say this, and I, for the American Family Radio Network, we are committed to truth, the truth about the biblical worldview. And by the way, folks, if you're listening to AFR and you're new to this organization, there's a wonderful magazine called The Stand. There are so many resources. There is the radio network and the hosts all day long, whether it be reporting the news or teaching the Bible, as I do every afternoon, or just cultural commentary on today's issues. I know, and I've had the honor, it's the greatest privilege of my life. I've been around this ministry like 15 years, and this is the most ethical, committed to truth organization. Then they have a news department that's just amazing, One News Now, and one of the main journalists, Steve Jordahl, he and I worked together 20 years ago at Focus on the Family. But Alex, to your point, yes, this ministry, this network, and all of us individually, we need to be committed to repeat truth so that people know truth. And as Jesus said, you know, in John 8:32, the truth will set you free. The truth will set our nation free. Let's repeat truth, but let's make sure that we are people of truth. Well, God bless you. It's been a great honor to sit in for Jenna Ellis. Keep your radio tuned to AFR. Tell somebody about the American Family Radio Network. Pray for America. Most of all, tell somebody about Jesus. God bless you. Have a great day now and a great week.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.